This episode of Inspiration Point is brought to you by the Quests and Chaos Podcast Network and the generous patrons over on patreon.com/inspirationpoint. So we'd like to give a big shout out to
Garlic Bread, Eric, and Spike.
And at our Muse $20 level, we'd like to thank
Prostaskius, Leroy, Kate, Jeremy, Jenna, Jacob, Falangor, Cheryl, A Bad Idea, Red Dead Coquette, and Robert Hans.
Thank you for helping us bring a little inspiration out into the world. And now, on with the show.
Oh, no. Oh, it's happening. Oh, good Lord.
Hey, everybody. We're here to talk about poisons and diseases. It's Inspiration Point. It's me, Adam, and of course, I'm joined with Tiana. How you doing?
I am exhausted. It's been a very long week, but I am good. I am here. I am having fun hanging out with you, my friend. And hearing you hack into a microphone definitely gave me a little bit of PTSD, like twitch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I tried not to go too hard.
Oh, no, you're fine. But I don't want you to go too hard because, like, coughing is really bad for your throat.
Absolutely. And I'm drinking coffee, which you're not supposed to do when you're recording. But, you know, I like coffee, so.
It's not the coffee aspect of it. It's the milk.
Oh, really?
Dairy I'm about to get gross for a second. I apologize. Dairy causes an increase of phlegm production. Mm. And so, like, if you're ever, like, drinking milk and you can, or really any kind of, like, milk-like products, there's a buildup of the phlegm in and around your vocal cords. I noticed this. I just finished recording the audiobook that I absolutely hate, and I got it edited and turned in, and it's done, and it's off my plate, and I'm so grateful. but there was one day where I was waiting for my neighbors to shut up and go back inside because of the way that my recording setup is. And I knew it was a bad idea when I did it, but I was hungry. So I came downstairs and I had hot queso and chips.
Oh, boy.
And for like 7 chapters after that, there was loud throat clearing throughout because I could hear my voice going hoarse with it because that was just like pure dairy straight to the vocal cords.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. the old queso and chips dichotomy, you know, it's difficult. You know, you failed your wisdom saving throw to resist it.
Obviously. I'm queer. I eat hot chip and lie. That is that's the rule.
I'll have to write that one down.
I stole it from somewhere else. it's usually more the bisexual thing, but I'm just like queer, not just bisexual. So
yeah, man. We did a lot of screwing around talking before this, and
we were chatting for like 40 minutes before we hit record.
Yeah, so guys, if you want to hear our nonsense, join us at patreon.com/. Maybe we'll make that available. Okay, so let's jump right in.
Let's do it.
Let's just get right into it. I want to talk about diseases and poisons, but mostly diseases. Because this week in my interactive storytelling class, I said, okay, here, I'm going to assign pairs of you different sections of Chapter 8 in the Dungeon Master's Guide, and you guys are going to read it, and then you're going to get up and you're going to talk about what you learned, okay? And so we did this little exercise, and one of the groups, of course, got diseases, and another one got poisons. And they got up and they did their presentation and they were like, there's not really a lot here. There's a couple of samples. There's some difficulty classes. And here's what happens if you get cackle fever, I guess. Would I ever use it? I mean, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. And then in poisons, it was like exactly the same. They were like, well, you can, you know, there's different ways to contract it. And then there's different poisons.
And shrugs forever.
Right. And then they're just like, that's all I got. Meanwhile, the group that, like, is talking about ability scores, you know, they've got, like, boy, there is a lot here. And there's not much, like, this is a short presentation. So, you know, we're going to do our best. And I basically knew that would happen going in because I'm looking at the sections and like siege equipment's much the same way where it's just like it's just listing, right?
Yeah.
And so there's not like a lot of real content there. And it's very strange because when it comes to the medieval fantasy, the medieval universe, disease could be so incredibly prevalent. The problem is with D&D is that, but then there's magic.
Right. It's one of those, how do you deal with, you know, we are playing out a medieval, like, setting, but it's fantasy, so there's magic. How do you balance those two? Because, like, you know, people will make that argument about being like, well, about when people want to be gross about differently abled people, they'll be like, well, why should there be wheelchairs in D&D? There's magic.
Because an artificer with a built-in chair would be metal. So your move.
Checkmate.
Yeah, no, like, dude, your battlesmith, literally, your animal companion is the chair you sit in. That would be freaking cool.
That would be so much fun.
Right?
There's so many cool ways to do things like that. But it is a question where it's like, one of the paladin abilities is being immune to disease. That never comes up. Mm-hmm. I've played several paladins, and every time it's like, I love seeing that little eye immune to disease. And I'm like, when is this going to come up? Is this ever going to come up? It should come up, because like you say, we're in a medieval fantasy, but just doesn't.
It just doesn't. And why? Why doesn't it come up? It's because, look, I like 5th edition, okay?
There's a huge but at the end of that statement.
Yeah, it's this part didn't work.
Yeah.
This felt like an afterthought. It's hidden in the midst of a bunch of ideas in Chapter 8.
Mm-hmm. One of the last chapters of the DMG is just sort of hiding under there.
Very few monsters are automatically carriers, such as, you know, like, why isn't, like, every undead just covered in something, right?
Yeah.
Why don't wolves
and
rats give you diseases? Like,
wolf teeth are some of the nastiest things.
They are, yeah. And why? It's like, okay, you got like your carrion crawler, you got mummies.
With the literal mummy rot, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, mummy rot. But even that's like more of a curse, right?
Yeah.
Because that's not one of the three here. They only list three diseases. They have cackle fever, sewer plague, and sight rot. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's kind of lame. So, first of all, what I want to talk about is how to better implement this kind of thing. And the more I looked into it, the more I realized this could actually be massive. Your whole campaign could be this.
Yeah, your whole campaign could be dealing with a plague and how it's caused and where it's come from and how to deal with it. Although I think we're a little bit too close to 2020 to play that scenario out.
Well, that was something I was going to say was like, this may not be the fantasy people want right now.
Right. Give it about 10 years and they might be more interested in that.
Yeah, I don't think people were super interested in terrorism right after 2001.
Yeah. You know,
as like a fantasy thing. But then we started having movies about fighting terrorism pretty soon after, like,
yeah, well, sure, because it's the power fantasy.
Yeah, there's the power fantasy, there's the revenge fantasy.
Yeah.
Which is, it's harder to have revenge on a disease, right? And what it did to us was personal to everyone in a way that even something like 9/11 was still far more impactful to the people that it directly was hitting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, not to downplay it at all, but you know, like, everybody felt COVID in some way.
Everyone knows someone who got very sick or died or even, you know, or was trapped in their homes because they were immunocompromised and, like, yeah, I remember being the grocery fairy for two friends of mine who are in their 70s.
Yeah.
And being like, you are not going out to the supermarket. I'm in my 30s. I can handle it. I have a better immune system. Let me go do this for you. And right. I would drop groceries off for them every week.
I'm sure they super appreciated that.
It was a way to like build that relationship with us and be like, we're keeping you safe. I like you. Please don't be dumb.
Yeah, right. And like, how do you not go to the grocery store? So, but all of these things could provide interesting plots because, you know, we had a few buffs in 2020 to help us deal, right? Like we had the internet.
Yes.
Right. Which was huge. In fact, we started realizing, wait, why are we still meeting? Why are we paying electric and heating bills on these buildings? Because something professionalism, something workplace culture. No, this is stupid, right?
And now the executives are fighting to get people back into those very expensive office buildings that they're leasing downtown because they're like, we want to actually like have the people to micromanage.
Yeah, like what were they going to do if we're not there to manage them?
Clearly, they cannot be trusted to take care of themselves.
Like. Man, there's a solution there. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Just the tip of my thinking right there.
It feels like it's right there, you know? Anyway.
But on the bright side, like, I had not really done many remote TTRPG games before that. I'd done a couple, but they weren't, like, as prevalent as they, or as, like, so accepted as they are now. They were always seen as, not even second-class citizens, third-class citizens, compared to, you know, being in person. And now, like, I play regularly in remote games.
Yeah, there was definitely, I don't want to say it was gatekeepy, but, like, there was definitely, like, some PC master race with, like, playing in the physical space. Like, this was how Gygax intended, you know?
Uh-huh.
This, like, if you're not rolling physical dice, what are you even doing?
Yeah.
And by the way, even though people use digital dice, they still buy dice. Like they're still getting them.
I have a huge dice collection that I can just look up and let's see.
It's just a habit, guys. Come on.
And I mean, we're all goblin brains. We want the shiny click clacks.
Yeah. We're all just working for the Raven Queen, bringing her trinkets. You know, with our bird brains. So, okay. So we had the internet. We also, of course, had. You know, things like penicillin. We had things like hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we had hand sanitizer, right? Like
sometimes we had masks. Sometimes we had PPE.
Yeah, we turned around and made not like true immunity, but like definitely like a booster to your immune system, like almost immediately. Like we got it really fast.
Yeah, compared to how long these sorts of things would have taken in the past, the vaccine coming out in what was it, a year and a half?
That was the word. It completely escaped me. Yeah, the word vaccine.
That came out shockingly fast.
Yeah, shockingly.
I mean. I could go into, like, why it was able to be so fast, but I'm not going to digress onto that side.
Right. That would end up being the episode, right? So.
Yep.
Suffice it to say that, on the other hand, D&D has magic, okay? But magic has a lot of limits.
It does.
And so, you know, some of the people out there are like, you just have to nerf, like, lesser restoration. It's like, no, don't do that.
You don't have to. How high level do you have to be to cast Lesser Restoration? And how many of that level clerics and paladins do you have running around?
Yeah, you have to be third level. And so it's, they're not running around. You don't. And then paladin, I think, has to be.
Like fifth level.
Like fifth level or something. I don't remember. But that sounds right. You know, they're like, you only have so many spell slots. And there is like a million people in your population.
Yeah.
Right? So what are you talking about? Also, let's say I cast a lesser restoration on you, and then you go out grocery shopping.
And then you pick it up again.
You pick it up again. It's like, well, I got the shot.
Did you give it enough time to incubate?
Yeah.
Did you continue to do the appropriate protective measures afterwards? No, this is why you have it.
This is why you have it, right. So there's that. You know, it could be funny if you have a particularly obstinate person in at your table to be like, here's a piece of loot you get. It is a mask that provides plus 1d4 to your saving throws. Do you want to wear it? Well, it's right there. Why don't you want it? I don't get it.
I don't understand. It's just a thing that you put over your nose and mouth. Why is it so hard?
What do you mean I'm trying to do something? I'm not trying to say anything. I just want to help you.
That's definitely one of those. Two things can be true at the same time.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, well, we could draw some parallels and we can make in-game equivalents to various things to make it a little more interesting. But the other thing about Lesser Restoration is that, yeah, it's like just super limited. Mm-hmm. And let's say it enables you to take care of your party, but the party getting the disease is not the point.
Right.
The point is that it's affecting everybody. And not only is it going to affect people's health, it's going to affect the ecology, it's going to affect the economy, certainly, and we're still feeling that with inflation just going out of control, while, of course, wages are staying exactly the same. And so we're having problem after problem. And COVID is quote-unquote over, right?
Quote-unquote. Very right. Heavy quote-unquote.
Yeah. So we have decided that we're done, right? So what does that mean? Well, that means that we've chosen to deal, right? And to, you know, do our buffs in the morning or whatever it is we got to do in order to deal. But we also know that people are still being affected, and it's the same thing in the game world, but we can go a lot more heavy-handed, right? We can have, you know, plague-carrying rats. We can have wolf issues. We can have poisoned water, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're going to go, like, hard medieval with your role-playing game and, like, people don't understand things and they're still trying to, like, balance the humors, right? They may not know about these things. And even if you do have magic, it's not like there's a cleric in every village.
Right.
Right. And so maybe they set a missive to the kingdom to send their guy, but the guy is like,
so overwhelmed.
He's like, dude, I have like 5 spell slots, bro, before I have to take an 8-hour rest. Okay. And so I'm basically stuck curing nobles all day.
Nobles who I see the same 5 people over and over again because these idiots.
These guys keep going out, right? Yeah. It's like, so I'm never going to get to Farmer John.
Right.
Right. Here's the other nice thing. You're a paladin. You're a cleric. You get to cure somebody's disease. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's a cool moment. You get to feel like a feature you had wasn't useless.
Right. With paladins are built to deal with plagues, if you think about it, because
they're immune
to disease. They can just walk in there and they're fine. That would be a really cool feature to be like, this campaign is going to deal heavily with a plague. And I'm like, my time has come.
Right. Yeah. And you get that Jesus fantasy, like walking around, like healing the sick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that feels good.
It does. Yeah,
you know, that's really cool. But if you walk around like Jesus, you're going to realize you also only have so many spell slots and the demand for your services is going to be quite high.
It's that story of like people constantly touching Jesus and power coming out of him and him being like, I only have so much, guys.
Like, stop touching me.
There's an element of helplessness that you can bring into storytelling with that.
Absolutely.
Where it's like, even if I'm okay, assuming that I am a good person and I want to help people, which I'm going to give the everyone the benefit of the doubt and just say that that is the case, you can't save everyone. And that's a hard storytelling thing to have.
Yeah.
Like, it's a super sobering moment to walk into a situation and be like, okay, I can help you, you, and you. And then you look up and the rest of the building is full of people who are sick, who are broken. I actually had that happen in a Dragon of Icefire Peak game where Cryovane attacked Phandalin while we were all at first level. And my paladin was able to help in, like, the healing and everything. But there were people who, there were so many people that she couldn't help. And it was like, oh, I have more abilities than the average Joe, but I still have very human limitations. And becoming face to face with that is sobering.
Yeah, it's sobering. It makes you extra upset at your antagonists, right? You know, it can form and break bonds with NPCs. Like, it can be extremely dramatic, which, of course, is the good stuff.
Mm.
All right.
We love the juice.
Right? The tears of yourself.
No one is meaner to my characters than I am.
Right. That's right. That's correct. There's a lot of potential for good storytelling here. Also, how do diseases spread? By the way, they spread.
Yes, they do. They spread through the air. They spread through water. They spread through contact, whether that's person to person or animal to person. There's a lot of ways that they can spread, especially if you're... I think it would be really interesting to have a story, because they talk about sewer rot or sewer plague in here. I think it'd be really interesting to start off a campaign where there's a mysterious disease that's in the sewers and the people above just don't care because, they're the sewer rats. They're diseased anyway. They're going to die anyway. Who cares?
Here's a great idea, plebeian. Maybe don't go in the sewer. Poor people are so stupid. And then, by the time we're in chapter 3, it's gotten way worse.
It's spread. It's gotten up because...
This is now your problem.
Here's the fun thing about disease. It doesn't care how much money you have.
Yeah, it does not. It doesn't really care about anything, right? It just be.
Yeah.
And it's just going to keep going and going and going until you make some serious changes. And so what kind of changes can happen, right? As this thing is spreading, it's like, you cured a guy. Good job. However, did you know that it was on their clothes? Did you know that they touched the same broom handle? You know, like, okay, because now it's back.
Yep.
Right? Depending on how virulent you want it to be. And I do like that idea of it being a, like, small problem as far as the gentry are concerned.
Yeah.
And then having that become worse and worse over time.
Yeah. Because, like, one of the things that people ask, and I think legitimately so, is, you know, if something like this broke out in Waterdeep, Laurel Silverhand is right there. Why wouldn't she, like, use her ability as one of the Daughters of Mistra to just, like, make it all go away? And it's like, well, the easy answer is it doesn't come to her attention. There's a lot going on in Waterdeep, and if it's never brought to her attention, it could grow and fester until it's so big that she can't.
Right, she can't deal with it. Maybe that's why they hired you, by the way, to go deal with it.
Yeah. Or maybe it isn't a hiring situation. Maybe your BB Paladin came from the slums and, like, their cousin reaches out and is like, hey, there's something going on. There's something wrong. Can you come and help us?
Oh, now we can bring in that urchin background, right?
Yeah.
Because that's another thing that usually doesn't get enough play is your
An
background.
An urchin background paladin. I want to play this now so badly.
Right? Yeah. No, that would be fantastic. Like, you grew up in the hood and then you're now the hero. The problem is the hood's still there.
Yeah. And right? your family and is still in there. And there's people that you care about and you love. And there's something wrong, and they're being hurt.
Maybe the reason you became a paladin and went through all that challenge was so that you could help everyone, so you could save them.
Yeah.
Save your family. You know, whatever it is. And that can be extremely heartwarming, because paladins are often played as, like, xenophobes. And, like, there's a fine line between a heroic paladin and just a self-righteous a-hole.
Yes.
Right? And so I like that idea. So then here's the next question. How do we deal with it? Right. Because now we have a problem for our players to solve. And there's a few different ways we could approach it. So What do you think is are one or two ways we might be able to deal with the problem of the plague?
So I think at lower levels, it's just figuring out, like, what is it? Because I'm going to be relating a lot of stuff back to COVID. I apologize.
Don't apologize. I mean, I think that is good for all of us, right? Because we all have that real world experience now.
It's true. But there's also like an internal twitch of, God, I don't want, I'm so tired of COVID.
Right. We're tired of it. Yeah. That's true.
But you like, one of the early things with COVID was we didn't even know what the symptoms were.
Right.
We just knew it was like flu-like symptoms. And like there are people who, you know, someone would sneeze and the area around them would clear out because we didn't know. We didn't know what the symptoms were. So that like fostered an environment of fear. But also,
and we had asymptomatics, you know, mm-hmm. people that were just that had it and had no idea.
The carriers, yeah. And, you know, no shade to them. That was just like the way it was. So yeah. I think like the first part of the campaign would be like, there's something wrong, but we can't pin down why these people are dying or what's going on. So like, I think the first part of it is just figuring out what the problem is.
Yeah. First of all, identify this.
Exactly. I think that would have to be a pretty short part of the campaign because that's a hard hook to hold on to.
Well, I mean, because there's a couple of origins that could happen, right? Like, we thought it came from somebody eating a bat for a while, right?
Yep.
That was a thing.
That was a thing.
Then, of course, there was the question of, does this come from Wuhan?
Mm-hmm. There's still the question of, like, in D&D, it could be some, like, rogue wizard building something virulent and sending it out. I could absolutely see a alchemist artificer accidentally making something like this and dropping it.
Right, yeah. Maybe this was an accident. Maybe this was a weapon used by a foreign entity.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe this is the natural result of some hubristic act by ourselves.
Ooh, I like that.
Where we destroy a local ecological feature that was preventing mosquitoes from the swamp from getting out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like now there's mosquitoes everywhere as a result of us doing this. Because we had to build one more wizard tower or whatever it was.
Yeah, we dammed up that river, so the swamp drained, and now everything is here.
Correct. Or we killed some bad guys, and we celebrated that. And then 2 months later, we started seeing a bunch of people sick. And it's like, well, what happened? Well, we fought at a river, and we killed the orcs, and they fell in the river. And, oh, I see it now. We didn't clean up the bodies. Yeah, we didn't get them out of the dang river. Oh, yeah, we drink from that. Whoops. Right?
Yeah.
There could be all kinds. It could also just be magical. It could be a monster that moved in, you know. Yeah, like purple worm toxin that's in the poison section. But, you know, that could have something to do with the carrion crawler just decided to move in. Because you destroyed all the orcs in the keep over there. And it turns out that they were fighting the carrion crawlers on occasion. And so, like, there can be all this cause and effect that happens. Of course, I like the idea of it being a conspiracy better. Because that's an easy sort of plot thread to create.
That's an easy plot thread. Another one could be not necessarily a conspiracy. I guess it could be still a conspiracy. Kind of like in I think I remember this being in Dragon Age Origins, where there's like that malformed big creature that's like the mother.
Yeah.
Like this idea of there being something deep under water deep that is being fed by a cult, mm-hmm. and in return, like it grants them the ability to poison their enemies, mm-hmm. and it's not a poison, it's a disease.
Right. Yeah.
And then it spreads from there. And then it's like, you know, this thing that happened because like they want to get revenge on someone spreads out of their control, but they can't say anything about it because that's their mother of the cult.
As unrealistic as it would be to have a bunch of misinformation surrounding the cause of your disease, you could still use it as an idea.
You can't even say that with a straight face.
Yeah, because like, what if it's a curse, right? Like, or people think it is.
Sure.
People think it's a curse. They think it's a poison. They think it's because the gods are mad at them.
Yeah, you can draw a very easy parallel to AIDS with that one, where it's like, well, you have done something wrong, so the gods are striking you down.
Yes, yes, yeah. Again, can't imagine this happening in real life, but...
I get a little sarcastic with the real world and how we actually handle these sorts of things.
Well, you know, stories are lessons. They ring with truths, okay? That's a reference to a movie you probably haven't seen.
I have not.
It's Brave.
I have seen that one.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen it once. I don't have kids, so there aren't kids movies on repeat.
That's so true. I don't even like Brave that much, but I've seen it like 90 times.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, there is an element of like you hold the mirror, as it were, up to reality, where you use a story to tell the world how it actually is.
Yeah, absolutely. So we can draw on real world events, like an entire populace asking the leadership, like, hey, can you help us deal with this? But low key, the leadership being glad that they're dying.
Mm-hmm. Because they're the undesirables, and having them die off like frees up that patch of land or gets these undesirables out of their sight. Which, sorry, I'm queer. I have opinions about that.
I'm not queer, and I have opinions about that. Yeah, no, absolutely. Genocide bad.
Genocide bad.
I'm gonna go out on a limb.
Letting your people die when you're not trying to do anything about it, also bad.
Yeah,
which honestly could be like a really interesting thing to bring into it, where it's like, you know, the mayor of a small city is actively like, no, it's fine. It's just those people over in that corner. And it's like, my guy.
It's not me.
Do you understand this can spread? Do you understand how diseases work? Well, I'm not one of them. I don't live with like that lifestyle. And then you have an immediately unlikable antagonist.
That just gave me an interesting idea. It's like, what if you have an enemy kingdom and you two are at war, but your kingdom realizes that they have a disease problem and they have like a no border, no sharing policy whatsoever. Well, you got to sneak your agents into their city to cure their problem so it doesn't affect you while still making them not believe that you're trying to infiltrate them politically. That could be really interesting.
That could
sneaky
be.
Compassion.
Sneaky Compassion is the name of my grunge band.
I'll listen to it. Sounds like dad rock, so I'm in. I think that's fantastic. So then how do we deal with that? How do we get the cure? Because now our whole campaign could be getting the cure, or at least our chapter or whatever it is we're going to do.
Yeah.
You know, are we going to use scientific means to create a cure, or are we going to resort to magic? Both cases can still be very, very effective, even magic, because it's like, okay, we can't literally teach the entire populace the lesser restoration spell. But if we get the magical crystal and the five rings and then the 10 artifacts, go to the temple of the...
Honestly, what I would find more interesting is empowering the people who are already on the ground. So like you were talking earlier about,
ooh,
like, every village isn't going to have a cleric, but every village is going to have a wise woman. So if you can, like, if you can figure out what the cure is, and it's something where it's like, it's going to be a lot of work to put together, but here's all of the herbs and roots that you need, and then you can infuse every one of the doses with a little bit of magic, then a little bit of magic can go a long way. And then you can, like, work with the land, work with science, work with magic, bring it all together, and, like, figure out, okay, This village that I came from is going to be kind of a test subject, because I hope this works. And if it works, awesome. And if not, well, at least it won't make it worse, hopefully.
So in this first chapter, we have to go around and collect the 7 wise women. And then we got to put them through school. But we also have to go on another quest to gather all the roots and all the herbs in order for this to work. And someone's attacking our wise women while they're gathering, so we mm-hmm. gotta defend them. Let's do D&D things.
Yeah, or someone is sabotaging the supply line of the various herbs and roots and natural things, or deliberately spoiling them, or...
Oh, but we have to make this happen faster, so we need to train a clutch of griffins to carry these wise women around.
Yes!
Wait. No, the griffins died. Okay, we gotta go to this artificer. Artificer, we're gonna need about 7 magic brooms. Oh, man. Okay, wear this hat. This is going to help you. It's going to signify to everyone that you're a wise woman and that you can cure them their disease. Oh, yeah, the wind is killing you on your ride. Here's this big black cloak you can wear and paint your face green for some reason.
I do love the idea of a clutch of wise women on griffins just, like, flying and saving the day and then being like, peace, and getting out. Peace.
They all have sunglasses for some reason.
That's very much like the Russian witches who were the scary dive bomb attacking ladies in one of the world wars.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. I don't remember what their names were, but... Yeah, that's pretty cool. But it's like there's a whole bunch of potential for like story and even just running around doing quest stuff that again revolved around this disease. Some popular media that had interesting diseases. The Dishonored game. I don't think you ever played Dishonored, but
I haven't. But I'm passingly familiar.
Yeah, it was developed by Bethesda, who did like Skyrim and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there was a whole rat plague kind of thing that was happening that was underpinning everything about that. Honestly, that world is so fascinating. I almost want to run a game in the Dishonored universe. And, like, their technology was completely based around, like, the use of whales.
Whales?
Like, using whale oil, whale blubber.
Oh, okay.
And even their bones to do all kinds of things. But there was also, like, very evident, as you were searching around, that the treatment of these whales was, like, horrific,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so there was this need to, like, transition away from it. And so, I don't know. It was super fascinating, but having a real-world plague with it was such a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It really provided a good backdrop. It also created that sort of apocalyptic atmosphere that is very popular in video games because you have to be able to run around town shooting people.
Right.
Right. And so it kind of justifies that when the people that are out and about are basically zombies. They did this also, of course, with The Last of Us, with that fungal
cordyceps
plague. Yeah. Yeah, that one.
No, I remember that one very specifically because MatPat did a game theory on it and it stuck with me.
Yeah, it infected you.
It infected me and carried me up into a tree and then devoured my body to feed the fungus.
There you go. So, yeah, I like the idea of going around, like, educating people, providing them with resources, gathering the 10 herbs needed. No, the 11 herbs and spices.
Exactly. you have to have that joke in there at least once if that is actually your thing.
Well, I say, in order to take care of this here plague, I'm going to need 11 herbs and spices that are hidden throughout the land, guarded by various goblinoid tribes. Now, the 11 herbs and spices are as follows.
I will say, tangented a little bit, I don't think that natural remedies are used as much in D&D as they should be, and I am coming... I believe that more and more because I'm running Phandelver and Below, and one of my player characters is a ranger who was raised on the land around Phandalin, and the player came to me, and they and I were sitting down and talking, and they were like, so I found a list that someone put together of different herbs in Faerun and what they do. Can I use this? And some of them have some really great effects. Some of them even have, like, minor healing stuff. But they have to go and, like, gather them. And it actually is, like, a resource that they have to, you know, find and spend. They're very good about keeping track of it. And it adds a really fun element to the game, for me anyway, and I think for them as well, where it's like, yeah, you are so connected to it, to the land, that you know this, this, and this. And I'll see them, I'll glance over sometimes and see them like flipping through their index cards looking for things that might help in the situation.
Yeah, and it's like they're becoming a real alchemist, right?
Yeah.
Practically.
But they're a ranger.
Right, yeah. No, that's a good part of the fantasy, you know. As long as your players are interested in that part of the fantasy, we can absolutely facilitate that. Like, if someone wants to be a smith, then maybe I'll have a crafting system. If no one is, I won't have one.
Yeah.
Right? And it's pretty simple. Anyway, so that kind of brings me into the last point about diseases, and it's going to kind of transition into poisons a little bit more, which is just the difficulty class, like having to deal with it. Because for the most part, just passing your con check is kind of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And most player characters won't even get the disease because, let's see, Cackle Fever is a DC 13. Sight Rot is a 15, which is really good. Sewer Plague's 11. That's not high enough. Like, I think 15 should be the weakest thing that you have,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it should be a big freaking deal.
It should.
Right. And a DC 11, a kid can accidentally pass that, right? Just through sheer luck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A lot of the poisons are much the same way as we look through.
Yeah.
Again, they're just con saves.
Yeah. Which... I do want to say one more thing about disease before we move on to poisons.
Sure.
Yeah. I would encourage GMs to incorporate disease a little bit more into their games, even if it's not like a huge plot point. I do encourage, if you like go into an area where there is disease, or have that be the case, or if you're down in the slums, roll to see if you catch something from the water. The one thing that I will, because I have seen this as a femme person playing games, be careful using stuff like STDs in games, because there are consequences for choices. There are consequences for player choices. But they should never feel punitive. Mm-hmm. I say the same thing about pregnancy with player characters. I think that pregnancy should not be something that is rolled on a table. That is something that you talk to your player and be like, is this something that you're interested in, like accidentally fathering a child? Or if you're a female character, let's talk about that, because that's kind of a thing.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
But I hold the same thing with things like STDs, where it's like, you know, people will play into like the horny bard thing. And, you know, if you want to discourage that, I strongly encourage not using STDs because there's already such a stigma around it.
Correct. Also, a lot more people have STDs than you realize. I had a friend in medicine, and they're like, you have no idea how many people have herpes, right? Like,
a lot of people who have herpes don't know that they have herpes.
And also don't know that they have herpes. And so it's like, while at the same time, they're shaming people with AIDS or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, there's definitely a big hypocrisy there. And like a lot of prejudices, it's just not true.
Yeah. And it's just based on, well, I don't have that, so I'm better than you.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Oh, man, the look on your face when I said that.
Oh, man, I get so irritated with that, you know.
I do, too. But yeah, so that's like the gentle reminder that I will give to people. I do encourage using diseases, even if it's not a big plot point, but be careful with things like STDs because there's already such a stigma. That's all I'll say on that.
100% agreed. I'm glad that you added that. You also mentioned going into various adventure areas. Remember, even if you're not sick, like your characters aren't sick, even your paladin who's immune to disease can still carry.
Yeah.
And they can absolutely inadvertently spread disease. Something, something colonization, something, something.
Something, something smallpox blankets.
Yes, exactly. That could be intentional or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So... keep that in mind the next time the Githyanki come to visit.
Oh, God. I don't even want to know what kind of diseases are in the Astral Sea.
Or just on some rando world. I mean, you know, if they go to Avernus, how is Avernus not just riddled with disease all the time, right?
Right. Because
wouldn't it be?
It should be. Like, all of those dead bodies laying around, all of the infernal machines, all of, like,
yeah.
Yeah, that should just be riddled with it. And like everyone who lives there is acclimated to it, but your character's going in there and descent into Avernus.
Right. Yeah, and I heard it's a warm environment.
A little bit.
Which could be good for
incubating,
Incubating. Of course, there's also a lot of fire. So anyway, the only place I can imagine that's more infested than the Hells would probably be the Feywild.
Different kind of infestation, but yes.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the Shadowfell.
Oh, the Shadowfell. Well, I was thinking if it was the Feywild, the symptoms could be pretty outrageous, right?
You're just tripping on mushrooms and just like, I'm so sick.
Like, in this disease, you don't go blind, but your eyes get really, really big.
like anime girl eyes?
Yeah, you get anime girl eyes and they become colorful pinwheels like
yes.
Your Apple computer is thinking, right? You know, flowers grow out of your ears, you know, all kinds of wacky stuff if you want to go a less serious route.
Oh, yeah, because like disease is definitely a real world thing and it's hard to deal with sometimes. But sometimes you just got to poke fun at it.
Sometimes that's how we deal, right?
Yeah.
We put it in fantasy. We make fun of it. We tell our jokes while making our way to the hospital, right?
Yeah.
So poison is very, I would say, related in a way because it's just, this is a thing you should not consume that does not mix well with your body and can cause it to fail.
Yep.
Right?
In horrible, horrible ways.
Again, this is just kind of a boring section of the book. It talks about contact, ingestion, inhaled, and injury. These are different ways that you contract the poisons. And then it gives you actually a pretty long list of different poisons that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them hint at where you might get the stuff to make it, but some of them don't. Like, obviously, like carrion crawler mucus is Whoa. Like, did I find a carrion crawler? Okay, I should be able to harvest mucus from it. Wyvern poison, serpent venom, purple worm poison, right? Something like that. But what is assassin's blood? What is, you know, drow poison? Is that derived from a specific plant? What are we talking about, right? And so they do have a little section about crafting and harvesting poisons.
Mm-hmm. But you know, it's two paragraphs.
It's two paragraphs, and I'm not saying it needs to be this big, long thing, but this is a pretty easy place to, like, I don't know, put in some kind of reward. Like, I know that there is a big, like, adventurers don't craft kind of movement out there where they're just like, why am I spending my adventure time making things? It's like, well, not every character is going to, number
right.
one. And so you're right in that aspect. But on the other hand, you really can't imagine the rogue on your team being interested in crafting poisons for adventures.
Right.
Right? You can't imagine that. You can't imagine your fighter wanting to smith a cool hammer. That's out of the realm of possibility. So I do kind of wish they would have said, okay, specifically this thing is derived from this thing that kind of grows in this environment under these conditions, right? And instead, they're just like, they're all the same. They're all, here's a DC check. Here's the bad thing that happens to you. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it makes the having a variety of poisons kind of pointless.
Right.
Right. Whereas instead, it could just give you a list of possible effects, right? And then call the poisons whatever you want. So why do we bother going through and defining them if there's not the definition of it that matters? Okay. So, but it's pretty easy for you as a GM to say, okay, this flower on this mountain does the thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And you don't have to make it a separate thing. If you're thinking, okay, they're going to go into the cobalt mines, you know, then we're going to say there's this mushroom that grows in certain parts of it now. Now I've added something to my dungeon that's a little bit interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Have you seen a whole lot of poison use in games other than just like a monster doing poison damage?
Not really. I think that there's a sense of it that poisons are something that the bad guy uses.
Right, right, right.
That like the drow assassin coats their dagger in before they stab you or whatever. I'm very So my ranger character in Phandelver and Below has been gathering a bunch of like monster parts as they've killed them. And it's things like poison sacks. I'm very curious to see what they want to do with those.
Mm-hmm.
Like at some point the player and I are going to sit down and be like, all right, I know you have all these materials. What do you want to do with them? Because like you're not going to have a ton of downtime.
That's absolutely true. So I feel like if I had a player that was like, I want to do this, and I have had them before. I've had a couple that have been like, my character's really into poison. I usually make it some sort of reward that is attached to like the monster we're fighting or the environment that we're going into. So in on top of your, you know, your gear and your money and your art objects, you know, if maybe these aren't normal drops, but because your character has particular skills, they can get this. So, you know, you can extract the venom sac without it, you know, hitting you too hard. Maybe it has less if it used the attack one or two times.
Sure.
But then that also raises, like, how much do I give?
Mm-hmm. Because it's so easy to overgive or undergive. And that's it's a hard balancing act.
It is a hard balancing act. And so I would say it depends.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If it's a thing where the player wants to make this a regular part, I don't want to say no to that. The question is going to be, how much downtime is there?
And the downtime, this goes into the downtime issue that many campaigns just are go, 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 go.
Yeah. Usually the entire events of the campaign happen over the course of a week.
I remember commenting as my character Andraste that, you know, everything that happened in the Chaos Agents game happened over the course of like 3 or 4 months. She's an elf. She'd already lived for 105 years beforehand. She's like, this is the most intense period of my life. I went from a level 1 cleric to a level 13 cleric in 2 months.
Then that is massive, right? Yeah, that must have been insane. To think about, but that might be more of a topic for another time. But I would say if we have a lot of downtime, and I like downtime, then let's say, okay, you cleared out the kobold mines and you gathered a lot, but you're going to need to spend some of your downtime going back there and harvesting again. Oh, mm-hmm. There's no kobolds anymore, or you're such a high level, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Or we hire somebody that brings them in, but that's still somebody's job. And they're only going to be able to do so much at a time. So maybe now you have this drip of like, you know, 10 units a week or whatever it is.
Sure.
On the other hand, if we're not going to do that, then I would say let's give them a nice, big, generous amount up front with the understanding we're not going back.
Yeah. With the knowledge that, okay, we went through a portal that got us all the way over here. And now we're going home. But we're not coming back.
But we're not coming back, right? We're not going back to the mines. So if you actually down a purple worm, with your party, I would say, okay, you extract, I don't know, like 30 of these things, right?
You've got like a little cask that you have filled with the stuff.
Right. You've got a lot now. And that should pretty much last you the rest of the campaign without you... You know, given that you're not purple worm poisoning everything you see, right? So you're only doing it against like major threats or like when you need it, right?
Because, I mean, that's not something to be wasted.
No.
Although that will end with the potion hoarding that happens in every role-playing game that I have ever played where I end the game with like 99 health potions.
That's right. Yeah. That's so true. Although in Baldur's Gate 3, like, if you really use that stuff...
Oh my god, I use so many healing potions.
It can really make your life a lot easier to just use the dang scrolls that you're getting.
Uh-huh.
You know? But there's some stuff like Bestow Curse where I'm like, this sucks. I don't like this. But man, I get a scroll of Cone of Cold that's like, dude, hold on to
use
that thing.
Use that.
You're going to use that. That's some good stuff. Okay, so anyway, not as much to say on poisons because it has been a less of a cultural touchstone, but let's just say, like, we could make the crafting and harvesting of it a little bit more interesting. Also, if you're playing a game with a lot of political intrigue, this should come up.
Poison was, like, the tool of choice for a lot of political intrigue in history. So, yeah, that absolutely should be a part of it. And yeah, there's a lot of fun things to play with there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We can also reverse engineer this a little bit by, let's say your character's not a poisoner, but they are an investigator.
Mm.
Right? They may be able to discover maybe not all of the clues on the body, but they can discover enough clues to send them on a chase to locate these other materials. And then we realize there's only one place it could have came from. And then we go to that place and guess which family owns it?
Yeah.
Right? And then that's cool. All right, we can really use that. The follow-up section was about madness. And so I was thinking about possibly saying, okay, this episode's all about afflictions. But I knew that disease was going to be most of it.
Yeah.
But I also didn't want to say the whole thing was diseases. And so we talked about possibly doing a whole thing about madness later on, because that is also kind of politically charged.
Yes.
Because our ideas regarding madness have definitely evolved over the last couple of decades.
Even over the last 10 years, because you were pointing out that the DMG was published in 2014. It is now 2024. It's been about 10 years. And our concept of mental health has shifted so much, even just in that single decade.
But still, the concept of a character being emotionally and mentally affected by the horrific things that they see when they're going out and doing their dungeoning, not to mention all their backstory trauma, you know, or anything else that could happen. We still recognize it as a very valuable tool to be used. And just like poison or disease, it could have a similar effect of this is the result of you interacting with the world.
Mm-hmm.
But there's kind of a right way and a wrong way to approach that. And so Tiana has a lot more experience because of Call of Cthulhu and that being much more prevalent in that game than it is in D&D.
In Call of Cthulhu and in Deltagreen, both of which I play very regularly, sanity is a core stat. You know, you've got all of your like physical and mental stats, and then you have your sanity. And it's such a core part of the concept. There's a lot of mechanics built around what happens when you lose sanity. If you lose a certain amount of sanity, what happens? And that's something that we have had to handle in the redacted reports, where it's like, you know, this character lost 11 sanity in a single go. That's fully a fifth of his sanity. What's the after effect of that? But that is something that is a much broader topic that I think we should do a full episode on at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you guys are interested in us talking about that, let us know. Otherwise, we'll probably do it anyway.
No gods, no kings, just us.
Just us, right? Also, the illustration it has of the DMG for madness is a king.
Huh, mad kings. Those are
mad kings. We like those.
Those are fun to play with.
Like Nebuchadnezzar of Bible fame.
Oh, man. I just had like the Ratatouille moment of like memory slamming into me. Like, oh, my God, I forgot that name. And then you said it. I was like, all of the stories. Oh, my God.
Oh, they're back.
They're back.
Well, really, it's the story of good King Nebuchadnezzar trying to deal with these a-holes that are causing a bunch of ruckus in his city. And he's just trying to, like, keep the economy moving. Anyway.
That sounds right.
I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, on that note, let's go ahead and wrap this up. Let's give people the medicine to go home with.
Thank you all so much for joining us for this episode of Inspiration Point. We hope that we've given you some things to think about in your games going forward, possibly a couple of campaign plot hooks. We'd love to hear about them if you do them. Feel free to jump into our Discord. Check out our Patreon if you want to see. If you're interested in seeing the like weird stuff that we talk about in the 30 to 40 minutes before we hit record on the recording software, that is something that we're looking at doing and having that be a patron perk. Let us know if that's something that you're interested in. But until we meet again, friends, stay safe, stay healthy, and stay inspired.
Bye-bye, everybody. Also, what is the ingredient that's going to get you through all poisons and all diseases?
The secret ingredient
is love. It's love, guys. I'm just kidding. Go see your doctor. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inspiration Point. If you'd like to support what we do, go and check out our Patreon at patreon.com/inspirationpoint. If you can't support us directly, that's okay. You can also help support us by telling people about the podcast. A little inspiration goes a long way.
Inspiration Point is edited and produced by Tiana Hansen and is distributed by Quest and Chaos. If you like what you hear with us, give Quest and Chaos YouTube or Twitch channels a visit. They play Dungeons & Dragons on a weekly basis and have a bunch of campaigns of Call of Cthulhu, D&D, and board game playthroughs archived on their YouTube.
Join us next week for more inspiration.